When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
You're now listening to The Jillian Michaels Show.
Okay, Tombster.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have something that I want to talk about today. What a shock. You'd hope so, because it's a podcast.
Well, I have no idea what this is going to be.
No, you don't, but I want your feedback. Jake, I want your feedback, too.
Okay.
Okay. We know that I'm a control freak, right? We know this.
Yes.
And that I'm neurotic. We know this, too.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that I don't really let things go well at all. Like, I can't really let them go. Very hard for me to let things go.
No.
And I think I was talking, I don't remember if we discussed this on a podcast yet. I don't think we have. But I was talking to my shrink about my inability to kind of like move forward. I stay stuck on trying to change and fix things. And even when it's like it's happening, right? Like, I think part of this is like when decisions are made that I feel will affect me, that I'll be held responsible for, I have a really hard time letting go of trying to change them. So, for example, like if there's a TV show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And someone makes a decision, whether it's another producer or the network, that I don't think is the best choice, even though I don't have the power to say, like, you know, I don't have the power, I don't have full control.
Right.
To say, you know, I really don't think this one is a good idea. If the show fails, everyone's going to turn around, because I've lived through this before, obviously, and say, Jillian Michaels can't carry a show. So I feel like I need complete control, because if something goes wrong, I want the consequences to be because of my bad decision,
right?
Not someone else's bad
right.
decision. And this is where, like, people who play team sports, how do you do that? How do you do that? Like, there's no I in team. No, there's not. But there's an I in win. And Heidi thinks I'm crazy because I'm like, team sports are hell. What if somebody's bad and you lose over and over and over again and it's not your fault? It's like my nightmare.
Well, I think team sports are a little bit different because when you get to that level where you're playing like at a competitive level, everyone there is at your level.
What if it's Little League? What if it's Little League?
But Little League's not competitive. We're talking,
yes,
we're talking about T-ball.
Are you crazy?
Well, do you think that those kids that go to the Little League World Series aren't, like, drafted, for lack of a better word? Like, that's not just any kid that signed up. Those are all the all-stars from each Little League.
Little League's not a good example, I don't think. I remember, like, the coaches being super aggressive, being 6 years
someone.
Old, 7 years old.
Yeah, yeah. You yelling will cut a bitch over Little League.
I played soccer, and I played on a competitive team, and we traveled.
Okay, was there a crappy player?
No, because by the time you got to that level, you filtered out the crappy players. Everyone that was playing was the best at their position, at their job.
But if you lost, they weren't like, Autumn sucks. They're like, that team sucks.
Correct.
Yeah.
So for you, it's different because I think in this scenario with, you know, a TV show, there's so much ego in the room. And I'm not talking about yours.
I can't just move on. Like, my shrink is like, you're... You know, the neurotic, like, builds castles in the sky, and the psychotic wants to live in them. He's like, you're neurotic. He's like, you can't control the world, right? You're not God. You're not omnipotent. And, you know, I can't make the white pillow on my couch black. And I was like, of course you can. Dye it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, that's not how it works. I'm like, that's exactly how it works. And the problem is that I have muscled situations and circumstances to get them where they need to go. And part of it is that I think to a certain extent, it's been a big part of my success is that I just keep fighting for something, or I keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And in some cases it's worked for me. In some cases it hasn't. And I have a hard time. So like there was something that was going on set the other day, and I can't talk about it, but something that I knew was going to be not the greatest idea was in fact turning out to be not the greatest idea. And I was really frustrated by it. And then on set, it was like, well, you know, step in and do X, Y, and Z and try to kind of save the day. And I couldn't get past the, I told you not to do this, right? And I was not being a huge bitch, but I was like, can we please change it? And they're like, no, we can't change it now. We're in it now. It'll be fine. You know, and I was like, no, it, you know, and then it's the, it'll be fine, which I don't ever want to hear. It'll be fine.
I hate that answer.
I never want to hear it's good enough. Mm-hmm. Good enough to me makes me want to kill myself.
It's like, fine.
It's good enough. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing. Like, it should be great, and we shouldn't stop until it's great. And when I see things, and they're like, it's a first season. Like, it's good. You know, next season, we can, you know, we can tweak, and, like, we're feeling it out. And I cannot. I will lie in bed and be like, I knew we should have done it this way. I can't. I cannot. Oh, my God. Right? So... I'm working with this guy who is a former Navy SEAL. And I was like, how is this not making you insane? He's like, I don't know, man. Charlie Mike. Have you heard of this?
No.
I go, what are you talking about? Charlie Mike? And he's like, complete the mission. Complete the mission. I go, what do you mean? He's like, if I jump out of a plane and I have the squad that I have and we, you know, it is what it is. Complete the mission.
Right.
You know, he's like, you do everything that you can do to the best of your ability, and you just move forward, complete the mission.
I love that.
Right. Charlie Mike. And I was like, oh, my God, like, how do I get brainwashed to understand Charlie Mike? And like, because
I'm going to ship you to boot camp.
Girl, I literally was like, I need to go to Buds just as like a bystander so someone can help me with this, because he's kind of like, listen, and this, my shrink says it to me all the time, but for some reason, the way this guy put it, he's like, there's nothing we can do about this. This is the format that we're in, you know, and I just keep thinking like, ugh, I wouldn't have wanted this individual to get beyond this point. And they're like, well, you know, it's good TV. And I'm like, no, I would rather have these two people up against each other, not those two. Anyway, he's like, this is where we're at. This is a show we're shooting. Charlie Mike, like, we do the best that we can do with what we have. Complete the mission. And, like, SEALs are the original MacGyvers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of... These guys are like, I have a paperclip and, you know, a French fry. And with this, I'm going to defeat ISIS. And, you know, like, they're like that. Like, they just are like, this is what I'm working with. And now Charlie Mike. And I just... Like, what do you think about that? Are you able to do that? Charlie Mike? How does someone get there? Because, by the way, at some point when there's nothing else you can do, all you're doing is hurting yourself and the project by being hung up on it, not being able to make the best of the situation because you're so busy fighting the situation. And then you're a problem as well. Then you have an attitude problem. Can you do that?
I think I'm a little bit better about that than you might be. But I do see where you're coming from, and I do think that that's a really difficult thing, especially when especially in the situation that you're in these kinds of scenarios where it's your face and your name attached to it.
These guys could die, though. Like a SEAL, someone like that, like someone makes all these decisions of you're doing this mission and you're doing it under these circumstances. Right. And they don't get to go, you know what? We're probably going to die because of this choice. We don't think it's a good one. They just Charlie Mike, man.
Yeah.
Charlie Mike.
It has to be that way, though, especially in the military. I mean,
do you get your head there?
I don't know. Practice.
Well,
say your mantra. You're Charlie Mike.
With a lot of things that you deal with, you always think this is going to be the end of the world for me if it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
That's how you think about things.
True.
But it never has been the end of the world. So maybe just look back and be like, well, that happened, but I got over it.
Jake, the fight to get beyond it is Herculean. Like, it's just unbelievable. Like, when losing it happened, I knew. I was like, we cannot do this with 6 weeks of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got people that are hundreds of pounds overweight, and it's, you know, we take them on, you know, the audience on this rough journey. Like, we're not, you know, we're in their homes. You know, people are going to feel like everything these families are going through. It's not like Loser, where they're all dressed up like Easter eggs and Disneyland, you know, weight loss camp. And you need a move the bus moment to make all of this hardship that we're seeing, you know, kids crying themselves to sleep about worrying their dad's going to die. You know, we need that to make people go, ugh, you know, whew, I feel great. I feel great. And, you know, when you only have 6 weeks, you know, these guys would lose 50 pounds, but it would just look like they got a haircut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I remember having this fight with this one guy who is still at the net at NBC. And I remember I was like, this isn't going to work. You know, I was fighting him, fighting him, fighting him. And he, you know, he was like, if she keeps up with this, we're going to rethink our whole relationship with her. Well, guess what? The show failed. And everyone around town was like, oh, God, you know, well, Jillian Michaels, bless you, Jake. Thank she you. Can't carry a show. And it took years. Oh, my God. Years. How many years? 5 years for me to kind of come out of that.
Yeah.
5 years. But it is like crawling back through, you know, all nine circles of Dante's Inferno.
But during those 5 years, I mean, you did other things. That wasn't your entire life.
But I had to rebuild my entire reputation. Like, Intel, because at that point it was like, oh, should we give her this? Should we give her that show? Her Q score is great. Should we? And oh, my God. And so I think, like, I've got to get my head to this place where I can commit to the course of action that's been committed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you're like me and you just fight it and you fight it and you fight it, I think the balance is, you know, you fight when it can still be changed. But right. When it can't be changed, when you're on the mission, when you're jumping out of the plane, when the cameras are rolling, or when whatever it is that, you know, this pertains to your life, like, somehow we have to get ourselves to Charlie Mike, or it is a foregone conclusion that it will be a disaster.
Absolutely.
And that's my little lesson that I'm working on is, okay, I'm in it now. I'm in the throes of this project. We're committed to this trajectory, and it cannot be changed. If it can be changed, if you can course correct, fantastic. But if you can't, and you're in it, then you have to look at the scenario and go, how do I make the best of a quote bad situation? That's my lesson for everybody to work on. It doesn't mean you throw in the towel. It means you have to commit. You have to complete the mission. Charlie, again, no matter what, that's what it is. That's what this guy said to me. I can't say his name because the network hasn't announced, you know, who my two co-hosts are yet. But Charlie Mike, man. For those of you who always wanted to be a personal trainer, I don't know what the heck you're waiting for, especially when NASM is helping people get paid to do what they love. And they guarantee, okay, listen, NASM guarantees you will land a job as a personal trainer within 60 days of earning your CPT certification, or they will give you your money back, guaranteed. You have nothing to lose. So what are you waiting for? If you've been hedging, if you haven't taken that leap, take it. You can work in health clubs. You can work in sports clinics. You can do corporate wellness. You can work with the elderly. You can work with kids. The possibilities are limitless. Build a career tailored to the things that you love to do. Be healthy. Help other people get healthy. Go to MyUSAtrainer.com for a free 14-day trial of their online program. That's MyUSAtrainer.com. Restrictions apply, so just visit MyUSAtrainer.com for details. All right. There are two subjects that we want to cover that are kind of food slash diet related. And the reason we're cobbling this together is because each one is really too short to be its own segment. So forgive how disjointed this is. But this was an article in Women's Health based on a food study that's on sciencedaily.com. And it has to do with the use by, sell by, best buy dates on your food. And what does it mean? Because honestly, how many times have you looked at it and it says, oh, you know, one of those three things and you're a little bit confused? So I think the first one that we should really look at is the sell-by label on the food. And this one is for the retailers. This isn't even actually for consumers. This one says, hey, you know what? Take this off your shelf by this date. I don't know what they do with it. I don't know how they repurpose it. But generally, if something has hit its sell-by date, they say that the product has one-third of its shelf life remaining. Now, of course, the confusing thing is, what's the total shelf life?
Right.
Which it doesn't address. How would you know the shelf life of a carton of milk? But sell-by is not the use-by date. So my guess is going to be, if it's sell-by, you probably got at least a couple more days to consume it. But, you know, get on the ball.
Well, I think that depends on what it is. I have, like the chicken. That's funny. I've been buying chicken.
Oh, no.
Chickens.
Little chickens?
Yes. Humanely sourced chicken. But the sell-by date, I'm never sure, like, how long after I can keep the chicken. And I feel like it spoils really quickly.
I think storage is also key, too. Like, are you keeping it in a cold environment? Is it an airtight container?
It's in the package it came in, and it's in the meat drawer in the fridge.
No, and with chicken especially, you want to keep that in a plastic bag, because you know that salmonella stuff can go everywhere.
And you mean this plastic bag, inside the plastic bag?
Put the paper.
Oh, God. My kitchen is a D rating. I am just cross-contaminating
all over
the place.
Chicken's tough, though, dude. And Van Hurley, it was funny, because Heidi went for her checkup with Dr. V. And I don't know how they got it. Oh, Dr. V used to, I guess, grew up on a farm or something. I don't remember. I'm probably getting this wrong. But something had chickens at some point. And Phoenix is always in the coop. And Dr. V was like, you got to be really careful with him in the coop. And Heidi was like, why? And she said, oh, because, you know, salmonella and the eggshells and all this stuff. You got to be careful.
Just being in the coop?
Just being in the coop. Because he always gets the eggs. And then, of course, they break. But anyway, you got to be careful. Yeah, chicken. Make sure you wrap that properly, because that stuff can leak and get in the...
Okay,
so what I learned in home ec is for milk, gallons of milk, you have 10 days to 2 weeks after the sell-by date to consume.
Oh, smell you.
Awesome.
What, home ec? What is this, the 50s? You're a 20-year-old.
Yeah, I'm also from a tiny backwards town in Montana.
Home ec.
We had to take home ec agriculture education and learn how to do wood shop, so... I got it all down. I'm still terrified of sewing machines, but I can sew on a button.
Oh my God, you're like Donna Reed meets lesbian.
Yeah, but I like guys.
Wood shop?
Yeah, I made a little duck that holds mail. I painted it purple.
So what did you say, 10 to 2 weeks?
This is
10 days to 2 weeks.
This is your replacement, huh?
I love her.
Hey, I can also change a tire and change the oil. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
There you go.
And I always have jumper cables in my car.
I think she's perfect.
God. We have Cody for those things. All right, that's interesting. Well, wonder why they would teach you that in home ec. I mean, I guess this stuff's online somewhere for each individual product. I bet you could find it. But
eggs last 2 months.
Eggs go a long ass time.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
When I feel like my eggs are getting kind of to the end of their life cycle in the fridge. I mean, they last forever. Mike freaks out sometimes when he sees the date on them. I'm like, they're fine. You know, you can do the egg test in a bowl of water.
No.
If it floats.
If they float.
Oh, because it's bad, right? Because it's got too much air in it.
Well, it floating depends how bad much they float. If they come up on their side, but they're not totally floating, they're getting close.
Okay.
You can still eat them. And when they get there, I usually just
hard
boil them.
Yeah, because I guess the air, like if the nutrients, like air gets in the egg.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you know. Yeah. Look at us. We're full of good advice.
All right.
So that's the sell-by thing. It basically means there's a little time left. But I might... We can't be specific about everything. So, yeah, maybe do a little homework, especially on the dairy, the eggs, and meat of all kinds.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because I did read this in part of this article, and it says that, like, normally we judge things by their smell or their taste, Which, I mean, come on, think about the last time you've gotten food poisoning. Did you smell or taste anything funky?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Really? Mm-hmm. Well, for the most part, it says that the microorganisms that are making us sick, you can't smell. Disease-causing organisms are invisible and aren't behind spoilage problems.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So, you know, like if salmonella is on a piece of spinach, you're not gonna catch it. So, you know, that doesn't mean it's gotta go by more than smell and taste.
Okay.
Although we did open up a yogurt today and there was something growing on top of it, but I threw it away.
Well, you were also drinking a juice. She passed it over in silence while we had the tape rolling. Like, throw this away. And I flip it over, look at the bottom, and it's 8 days expired. So that's a use by.
That must have been a use by, which brings us to use by. The use by label is aimed at consumers as a directive of the date by which the product should be eaten, mostly because of quality, not necessarily because it will make you sick after the use by date, which is true. Like, I've taken sips of milk that have gone off, or yogurt, and been like, I think that's bad.
Yeah.
Or that juice, and not gotten sick. But if you keep things far past the use-by date and the quality is lessened, it could make you sick.
Ugh.
And they also say that, like, if you've opened it and it's past the use-by date, it's more dangerous because it's been exposed to the environment, different bacteria, etc.
Okay.
Yeah, especially, that's why no double dipping, dude. You know, when you, like... Tombstick.
I am a double dipper.
No.
I have to get as much of that stuff on my chip as possible.
I've been trying to be better. It really grosses out the other person that lives in my home.
You can't double
dip. My little trail of carnage is everywhere.
You can't double dip because then the bacteria from the crap in your mouth grows in the food.
Yuck. Okay.
Yeah, don't do it. You cannot double dip for your own safety.
I'm reformed.
Yeah, don't double dip. All right, now Best Buy. This is a suggestion, apparently, not a rule, to the consumer on the date that it is supposedly best buy. And then after that, it starts to go downhill. So, got a few days after best buy.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think we did anything with that, or are you still confused?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to be product-based, like if it's got preservatives
That's
in it.
That's crumpling this.
And if it's organic, it's going to get rotten a lot faster.
True.
Well... But I have a question about that, actually. So,
good. Ask away.
I want to bring something up. So I buy organic milk, and it comes in the cardboard container.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You know, it's the quarts or whatever
they
are. How come that the expiration date on that milk is so much...
It's like 6 months.
Like, so long... Find your words, Autumn. So much longer away. I don't even know. That's not even right, but...
Than glass?
Well, I don't... Or the plastic ones.
Well, oh, really?
Yeah,
the one in the cardboard is the expiration is longer than plastic?
Yeah, much longer.
Insane.
So my Horizon milk.
Why is
it has an
milk
August.
In a.
The one in my fridge right now, like August 16th
container.
Expiration date. And I bought it 2 weeks ago. I mean, that's almost two
Why
months.
Why does milk in a cardboard container have longer shelf life?
They use a different process to preserve it.
What is it?
I was wondering that, or if it was because of the light. I mean.
The light. Oh.
Well, you know, I don't know.
What's the process? It's organic. Hang on. I love that we're figuring this out online. You know I'm not even going to edit this. Before opening. The paper carton, the entire product is heat sealed. Okay. Well, what's the... I guess that does something. Paper treated colored plastics. Plastic bottle.
I mean, I don't like the idea of having milk in plastic anyway. If you can avoid it, I like having that cardboard.
I bet there's a BPA lining in
there. So, regular milk is pasteurized, and that involves, like, putting in... Oh, my God, there was an A word. Antibodies?
Maybe I am going to...
And then the other one has an ultra-high temperature processing treatment that kills all of the bacteria.
I like that better.
And that's why it lasts longer, because they don't have any of the antibiotics in there. Antibodies.
Ugh, Creepsville. Okay.
I don't know about this.
I'm going to stick with my... Look, I'm just happy because it lasts forever, because we don't really drink milk that fast. So,
but it does have to waste. It does destroy some of the milk's proteins in there.
Yeah, oh, I think you want those antibodies. Those are good.
Yeah, but we're adults now, aren't we? I mean, are we even getting anything out of milk other than just to flavor the coffee? Is that a big factor?
You're not
in
wrong.
My...
I mean, I guess you could say calcium and magnesium, but you know, coconut milk has calcium and magnesium in it. So
I'd rather be organic and miss out on maybe some of those proteins and get it in my gummy vitamin.
Stop.
Or Flintstones vitamins.
You can't eat that. That's poison. Have you looked at what's in a Flintstones vitamin? Oh, great. Now we're going to... Good Lord. Flintstones ingredients. Have you ever looked at this?
No.
Really, it's like artificial color, artificial everything. It's like giving your kid a block of poison. Hang on. I'm going to have to edit this if we're going to get...
I get mine from...
Sued.
Thrive.
Come on. Flintstones, our products, facts... Why can't I get the ingredients? Ingredients, Flintstones, vitamins. Why can't I get this? Here we go. Ready? Aspartame. There's aspartame. There's genetically modified cornstarch. There's hydrogenated oil. There's ferrous fumarate. There's coal tar artificial coloring agents. F, D, and C, blue number 2, red number 40, and yellow number 6. I haven't even heard of this one. Cupric acid. How about those?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. How about those apples? These are children's vitamins, people. Yeah. So don't eat those. And I'll be looking forward to that lawsuit. Can you believe it? Kids' vitamins are supposed to be healthy, right? Well, then what's going on with Flintstones vitamins, which claims to be the pediatrician's number one choice, produced by pharmaceutical company Bayer? This wildly successful brand features a shocking list of unhealthy ingredients. This is like Heidi's, prenatals they tried to give her that had all that crap in it. Can you believe that?
That's scary.
Here, listen to this. Then it has this on the label. Warning, accidental overdose of iron containing something. Keep this product out of reach of children.
That's on
vitamins? The Flintstone box. Keep it out of reach of children. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I think we've done it. I don't even know that we can cobble our other food piece in there. Jake, how long have we gone?
12:28.
Oh, we got time. It's kind of long. Oh, you know what the brand we give the kids? It's like Life something. Hang on, I should tell people what it is. Organic kids vitamins. Hang on. Where is it? We give them this one, this Yummy Organics. It is a gummy. Hang on, it's called... Hang on, come here, baby. Yummy Bears. We give them those. It's organic. And we give them that one. And then there's like a Life something one that we give the kids. Where is that one? Vitamin Code also has an organic one for kids. But those are some of the ones that we give ours. All right, well, I'll be looking forward to this lawsuit. Maybe I will just scrap this whole segment.
No, not the whole thing, but...
Well, I'm allowed to say that the ingredients in... here it is, Child Life. That's what it is. Child Life. We give them Child Life, and we give them that Yummy Bear one. All right, I think we'll end this before I get into more trouble.
Well, what about the superfood?
We're already at 13 minutes.
Are you guys still listening?
No,
is anyone there?
We lost.
All right. Sorry.
We lost them.
Sorry, everybody.
I think with the milk and the Google and the whole thing, we're just figuring it out as we go around here. Hold on. Let us Google that for you. We are just a fountain of information around here. Okay, people. It's third love time. Now, I gotta be honest, when I first got the copy for the Third Love Bra, they made a lot of claims. A lot of claims! I'll read some to you. Hold on, where are they in the... Oh, no cup spillage, as in the boobs won't go over the cup. No cup gaping, God help us for our 5 mil listeners that are wanting to be dead right now. So, the boob and the cup, there won't be an inch of space. The straps won't slip, and I thought, sure. But then they sent me a bra. And I tried it on! And it actually did all those things. So now I'm here to tell you, the 24/7 t-shirt bra by Third Love. You're going to love it. It actually does everything it says it does. I swear to God. The cups are made of memory foam. It molds perfectly to your bod, your shape. It's super comfy. And guess what? Third Love stands behind this product so much that they're willing to let my listeners try this bra for free. Yeah, a free trial offer. You will pay $1 for shipping. You can wear it for 30 days. Take the tags off, wash it, wear it, try it out. If you love it, keep it, then they'll charge you. If you don't love it, you can send it back for free and your card won't be charged. Plus, if you don't know your size, they get a friendly online fit specialist who will help you find your perfect fit. Go to www.thirdlove.com/Jillian. Okay, so we've got Dan Savage coming on as our guest, and we've already done the segment, but I am not going to edit him, actually. I'm not going to bleep him. There are a lot of swear words. No kids, and if you are offended by swearing, do not listen to this segment. I'm not going to bleep him because I just like the fact that he is who he is. He says what he wants to say. He kind of desensitizes us to these words, and they are just words. He's not calling anyone a name. And that's it. So be prepared. There's some F-bombs. There's some swearing in there. It's adult subject matter. No kids.
All right, guys. We have a treat.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, yeah.
We can't believe he agreed to come back.
I
but
know.
We have a very special guest with us today. It's Dan Savage from the hit podcast Savage Love. He is
the
an
bomb.
Author. It was amazing.
The bomb.
Sex advice columnist, podcaster, pundit, and public speaker. And he is here with us today to talk about
the three things that ruin sex lives. Dan, hi, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm way too Catholic for that kind of an introduction. I don't feel worthy of all of that praise.
Oh, shed that guilt.
Yeah,
shed that guilt, Dan.
You're like our favorite guest. We're so, so excited and thrilled to have you back. We can't thank you enough. And
well, I had such a blast last time. I'm thrilled that you asked me back. So, feelings mutual.
And so what I wanted to talk about, I saw this article about the three things that ruin sex lives, and it was so depressing, and there was no information on kind of how to overcome it, and I thought, okay, you know what, Dan can probably help us out with this, and I'm sure you know the first thing on this list is going to be infidelity, and I was wondering, A, what are your thoughts on this? Like, how many people are doing it? What are the reasons people are doing it? Can people overcome it? Should there be a don't ask, don't tell policy? Like, what, just in general, what are your thoughts?
Well, the stats on infidelity are hard to pin down because if the phone rings and it's somebody from the government or a research institute saying, hey, have you cheated on your wife? Not a lot of people are going to answer that question.
Good point.
Truthfully,
good point.
So you get stats ranging anywhere from like 15-20% generally of people, men and women, to 50-60% of people in long-term relationships having cheated. And it seems to me that knowing that almost all long-term relationships will be touched by infidelity, it's like touched by an angel, but it's infidelity that
Yeah.
We should be a little bit calmer and more rational about infidelity. So long as we define infidelity as a relationship extinction level event, that the only response to an infidelity is divorce or the end of the relationship, that the relationship cannot possibly be salvaged in the wake of an infidelity, then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and we're essentially writing the death warrant for every long-term relationship at the beginning. If that's what we believe.
Point.
Now,
yeah.
That article that you cite, or that you know, that argument that infidelity hurts, you know, a committed couple's sex life, that gets it backwards in most cases. Infidelity almost always comes after the sex life is already, you know, something is going wrong. Not always, you know, individual results may vary, but it's often, in my experience of letters I get at Savage Love and the calls I get, is the sex at home has, for whatever reason, died, and in desperation, someone goes out and gets it elsewhere. So it's not like someone goes out and gets it elsewhere and explodes an otherwise awesome sex life at home.
Okay. See, because then the next one was loss of attraction. So this loss of attraction essentially comes before infidelity then. And that, of course, it does. I mean, I must admit that makes perfect sense. And any time that I've ever thought of going outside of my relationship is for that reason. When you are feeling like it's just become routine, or you're mm-hmm. growing apart, and
or you're being taken for granted, or,
yeah.
and this is a
yeah.
paradox for a lot of people, you're spending too much time together. This idea that we have now that, you know, your spouse or your partner isn't just supposed to be, you know, your intimate partner and your sex partner and your relationship partner, but your best friend, the person you spend every waking moment with. That's the death of eroticism. That's the death of romance. Esther Perel is a terrific couples counselor and writer, and she's a terrific couple of TED Talks that your listeners should go look up, where she talks about why people cheat. And there's one point she says that I love, which is the victim of the affair is not always the victim of the marriage.
Oh,
that there are sometimes people go out there and have an affair because they've been so victimized in the marriage that they're lonely, depressed, abused, whatever, and they're seeking some solace or happiness. But also, in many cases, people cheat because they're bored. They cheat to feel alive. They don't cheat because they don't love their partners anymore. You know, that's another myth that we to our peril, to the peril of our relationships, that we constantly reinforce, that if you cheated, you couldn't possibly love your partner. You couldn't do that to someone you loved. Therefore, circular logic, because you did that, you don't love your partner. And the fact is that people cheat for a lot of reasons, and not loving your partner isn't necessarily one of them.
Wow. You know what? I think this is funny, because when I have been cheated on, you do automatically go, well, you know, it's me. You don't love me. Yeah. I'm not good enough. And then when I think about the two times in my life that I have cheated, one was when I was getting out of a really long-term, horrible relationship, and it was the end. And it helped me. It was a bridge to get out. And it was exactly what you said. I mean, like, I was playing out, you know, patterns from my childhood, and this person was like an alcoholic and a drug addict and had cheated on me throughout our entire relationship. And that was when I was like, okay, you know what? I got to get out of here. And it was like the first person who showed me attention, and I was so kind of deflated that when someone showed me attention, I felt pretty again. And I was young, of course, in my you know, mid-20s. But everything you're saying makes perfect sense. I don't know why I've never put that together.
And then there's, you know, people who, you know, the relationship isn't abusive, it's not repeating bad patterns, it's not alcohol abuse or drug abuse or emotional abuse. They still do love their partners, but they want to feel like an individual again. They want to feel alive again.
Yeah.
And this is one way to assert your autonomy, your individuality, and to have something that's just yours and feel desirable again, and to confirm for yourself your desirability. And, you know, I don't think people should cheat. I think people who make monogamous commitments should endeavor to honor them. But knowing what we know about infidelity, we should not tell people that if somebody cheats on you once in a, you know, multi-decade relationship or even twice that they were bad at monogamy. We should tell people that they were good at monogamy.
Oh, wow.
That monogamy, I think I said this last time we talked, monogamy, we tell people, is like virginity. You know, you're monogamous, you're a virgin until you fuck someone or fuck someone else, and then you've popped your hymen or your monogamy hymen, and it's over, it's gone. The monogamy is done, just like your virginity would be done after the first time you had sex with someone.
Yeah.
And we should talk about monogamy the way we talk about sobriety, that you're monogamous, but you can fall off the wagon, but you can sober back up, you can monogamous back up and get back on that wagon again.
Okay, well, then this brings me to two questions. The first of which is, I got to be honest, like when you were saying feeling desirable, having autonomy, like having, I was like, this sounds like heaven. Where do I sign up? I mean, because I do think, you're in this long-term relationship, and if you've got kids and a family, you know, you start to live for this family unit. And there is a certain sense of like, oh my God, I've lost kind of myself. I've lost my individuality. You know, you do start to feel older. And how do you reclaim that in a relationship? Is there a way?
By not policing each other for evidence of what you both should just assume to be true. Of course you both want to fuck other people. Of course your partner wants to fuck other people, just like you want to fuck other people. That you refrain from fucking other people because you made a monogamous commitment, that's one thing. And it's such a fool's errand. You just see people wasting so much time and energy and creating so much agitas and angst in their relationships by going after their partner for looking at a little porn, for staring at somebody on the street, for obviously being attracted to their personal trainer or something, going, oh my God, you totally are attracted to your personal trainer. And so people should be able to say, yep, I am. I would totally fuck my personal trainer 100% if I hadn't made a monogamous commitment to you, but I'm not going to. Of course I want to, just like you want to fuck that barista yesterday who gave you the eye when we were getting coffee. For fuck's sake, you know.
Oh my God.
And one way to get there is to just admit that no, one person is not all, cannot possibly be all things sexually, erotically to another person. And once you give each other permission to be desired by others and to desire them, which is different than acting on those desires, then you can go out in the world, even go out in the world together, and, you know, if somebody flirts with your partner and you see your partner through that other person's eyes for a moment, that can kick back into gear your lust for your partner.
Wow.
You know, I know people in monogamous relationships don't like to take tips from non-monogamous people or swingers, but, you know, not saying to swing, not saying to have sex with other people, but one of the things when you talk to swingers, when you read books about swinging and the dynamics of open relationships, is people are often, when they see their partners having sex with someone else, filled with lust for their partners.
God, see, I think that I would be so narcissistic that it would be all about me and my ego, how bruised my ego was, how inferior I would feel in the moment. Not like, oh, wow, you know, they really think I'm with somebody special. I'd be like, how disrespectful. I would completely go to the worst possible place. Which,
because of your social conditioning.
You think? Or maybe I'm just an asshole.
To believe about love and possession. You know, it's just like, you know, is your partner, you know, are you a small child and is your partner a toy that you're bored with and you're not going to let anyone else play with it? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't want to play with this toy, but you can't use it because it's my toy. And
wow.
when you watch little kids, like a kid who's bored with a toy who suddenly sees somebody else playing with it, suddenly wants to play with that toy again.
Both my kids. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's both of them. It's incredible. So, okay, now let's presume that an infidelity has been revealed in the relationship. And you kind of addressed some of what I was going to ask you about. But, like, how do we move past it? Is it, can you after the fact go, okay, you know, I let me look at what I'm doing to, so like these two, this two guy friends of mine, one of them, is working like crazy. Right. And he, which another question I'm going to ask you about is he just has less of a sex drive than his partner. And he was working like crazy. He was feeling super stressed out. And his partner ended up coming home one night at 3:30 in the morning. And my friend was furious and like, I didn't know that he could get beyond it. And to make a long story short, his boyfriend was like, listen, you've been ignoring me. You know, you haven't wanted to touch me. You haven't wanted to have sex. You haven't been in the mood. I haven't been able to help you. And he sort of, you know, and then he ended up hooking up with somebody and didn't come home until 3:30 in the morning, which is kind of like exactly what you said about the toy that my friend was too busy to play with and was too sort of stressed out. But when it happened, in order to move past it, because it's like, you betrayed me, you disrespected me, should you look at what you did to contribute to it? Is that one way? And then what the heck do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to look at what you've contributed to it. I would recommend everyone, I'm such a fan of Esther Perel. You should invite her on your show too. Read her book, Mating in Captivity, which is about cheating and long-term relationships and affairs and adultery. She's also writing a new book that I can't wait to read. You know, when there has been an affair, and one of the things that Esther talks about, and it has certainly been my experience, is that suddenly two people who may have been hiding from each other get really honest with each other because everything's, you know, in the middle of the table. All the chips in the middle of the table. You might as well say whatever it is you want to say. And a lot of people who come through that, their relationships are stronger afterwards. And I'm not saying that, you know, take a relationship where people are bored or people are not really communicating and add an affair and it's going to cure it. It's
right.
Not like bleeding in the 18th century, right? We're gonna bleed you and you'll be better.
Right, right.
But a lot of people find that, you know, because they were protecting the relationship and the relationship was a thing that was greater than the sum of its parts, they really weren't being themselves and they really weren't being honest because the stakes were too high, because the risks were too great. So I was really honest, what if my relationship fell apart?
Mm.
Well, in the wake of the affair, the relationship is basically regarded as having fallen apart. And then people really start talking about why they're unhappy or what the affair meant. And affairs aren't always, I was unhappy, so I cheated on you. Sometimes it's just bored and opportunity and desire and impulse and, you know, risk. There are risk-taking personalities out there. I believe Hillary Clinton is married to one.
Yeah.
And look at
wow.
The,
oh,
like,
my
look
gosh.
At the Clintons.
Yeah.
Do you want to, you know, in the wake of an affair, do you want to be Bill and Hillary or do you want to be Mark and Jenny Sanford?
Yeah.
Who do you want to be? And nobody looks at Hillary Clinton now and says she's an idiot for having stayed with that man. People said that in the wake of the scandal, the sex scandal that Bill Clinton got wrapped up in, that Hillary had to leave him, that it was the only way for her to, you know, assert her self-respect,
right,
was to leave him. And I don't think she wanted to leave him, and I'm glad she didn't. I think she's glad, too.
You make such a good point, and it does come down to, like, self-respect and being degraded and being disrespected. And
And being able to forgive.
Oh, that is
this
so
is what
hard.
This blows my mind. When people call me at my podcast and say, you know, I love my partner so much, and I would take a bullet for her. I would walk through fire, but she made out with somebody else at a party, and I can't possibly forgive her for that. Okay, so you could get shot. You would jump in front of a bullet. You would do that, but you cannot forgive.
What is that? I wonder, because right. That sounds like something I would say to you. I would have done anything for her, and she disrespected me, and I never want to speak to her again. That's got to come from, like, deep-seated insecurity. It's got to.
And unrealistic expectations about what a long-term relationship is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, only in our marriages, only with our partners do we, you know, our parents disrespect us. We still love our parents. And we disrespect our parents, and they still love us.
Right.
And kids are shitty.
My
you know,
God,
siblings
you're
are
right.
shitty to each other. Only in this relationship do we say, you disrespected me. It's over.
You're right. Oh, wow. I never have thought about it like this. So then here's another question for you about, sorry, I know I'm harping on infidelity, but I think it's such a, you know, it's such a big deal, and it's something that I'm so afraid of in my relationship on both sides, because I'm like, we could never get over this. You know, I would never get over it. She would never get over it. We have kids. And it, like, some of my male friends who shall remain nameless just do it anonymously, and the wife never knows, and they, mm-hmm. she, and honestly, I don't think she wants to know. And it's like, don't bring anything home. I don't want to catch anything. Don't get anybody pregnant. Don't disrespect me. And there's kind of an agreement. Is that, what do you think of that?
I think that's what a lot of couples do. You know, people call that DADT, or don't ask, don't tell. We don't need that for gays in the military anymore. So here, married people, you can have it. And that's really, you know, I know a lot of people in relationships who said, you know, if anything ever happens, I just don't want to know.
Yeah.
And in some ways, that's a good control, because it, you know, puts in the other person's head, or puts in both partners. Sometimes people say, if you ever do anything, I don't want to know. And what they're saying is, if I ever do anything, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right? They're sort of getting out in front of it by saying, giving you permission to do what I know myself I might do at some point.
Interesting. Okay.
But it actually, you know, it sets a really terrific number of limits on an infidelity. You know, if you know that you can you know, sleep with somebody else once or twice over the course of your marriage without exploding it, so long as it doesn't get back to your wife or husband and doesn't negatively impact them in any way, you're not going to fuck your wife's sister. You're not
right.
going to have an affair with someone at work that gets, you know, emotionally entangling. You're going to be discreet and cautious and very selective, hopefully. You know, sometimes people do impulsive, stupid things too. But it really, you know, if somebody honors that DADT license, that you know, that little bit of freedom DADT gives them, then, you know, their opportunities are very limited.
Right. Yeah. That I see. I think women have those kinds of, like, office affairs. Whenever I see female friends cheat, it's usually like when they put in close proximity with somebody over a longer period of time, and they start to form this emotional connection. And I find that guys are like, oh, some girl at a party. Bing, bang, boom, done.
Right.
And one of my friends hit it and quit it. And
yeah.
I find that, like, men and women have different kinds of affairs. Do you think that's bull?
No, that's absolutely true. But why do men and women have different kinds of affairs? Because women are dealing with and accommodating or working around a different set of risks. There's just a study, you know, there's these studies done where they showed that, you know, if strangers approached men on a campus quad, and, you know, women approached straight guys and said, hey, you want to fuck? Most of the guys were like, sure. And if men approached women that same campus quad and said, hey, you want to fuck? Most of them were like, no. Because, you know, the men exist in a bubble where they don't have to worry about rape. They don't have to worry about violence. They don't have to worry about, you know, being abandoned with an unplanned pregnancy. Women have to shoulder all of those risks and consequences. And there's a new study out that showed when you controlled for risk and danger, women were just as impulsive, just as likely to jump into bed with a stranger as men.
Really?
Yeah,
so
the women you see cheating, it's with somebody that they've gotten to know, maybe through work, they have some sort of relationship with, they are controlling for those other risks, those other variables. For male violence, they're controlling for male violence, which necessitates often having some sort of relationship with that person before being intimate,
because
it gives you some sort of assurance, not a guarantee, see Lacey Peterson, right? No guarantee that if you know a guy well that you're safe.
Yeah.
but much less likely to be victimized. So, you know, guys who, you know, have an impulse affair and turn to their wives and they find out their wives had an affair too, and he's like, oh, it was a nobody, I never saw her again, I didn't even know her, but yours is worse because it's this guy that you knew from work, you had a relationship with, are missing the forest for the trees. Or missing the tree for the forest, or however that expression
goes. I know
exactly
what you mean. Right, of course. Okay, well, this sort of don't ask, don't tell thing brings me to this Ashley Madison hack. Apparently 37 million people were on this site. It's a covert cheating site. Am I getting this right? Because I actually don't know much about it, but Autumn is fascinated by this.
Yeah, I've never heard of this site. That's what everybody's saying this morning.
I swear to you, honest to God.
Ashley who?
So what happened? What are your thoughts on this? Are these people done for? Are their marriages over?
Not necessarily. You know, Ashley Madison is a site, you know, their slogan is Life is Short, Have an Affair, and it's a site for people who are looking to commit an infidelity with somebody else who's committing an infidelity. And then you have mutual assured destruction was a thing from the Cold War with our nukes are pointed at you, your nukes are pointed at me, so nothing's going to happen.
Wow.
So I'm cheating on my spouse, you're cheating on yours, neither of us are going to rat each other out.
Right.
And, you know, when people hear that, they always picture, like, a perfect, you know, couple, relationship, young kids, and someone being a cad. And often, in my experience with the male, is a lot of people who are married who are out there seeking, you know, an extramarital affair are people who've been rejected or sexually abandoned by their spouses. And I hear people who haven't had sex for 15, 20 years.
What? Why do they stay together then?
Because they have kids, because their partner is dependent on them financially or emotionally, because they're good parents and they actually do love each other and they are good partners and really good friends, but the sex is gone, or one of them had, you know, crashed their libido or is on antidepressants that are medically necessary to keep them from self-harm or you know, crippling depression that just flatline their libido. And people will stay, and they deserve some credit for that loyalty in the absence of any sexual contact. You know, I think marriage is about more than just dicks and pussies, frankly.
Right.
And there are people in marriages where the sex has collapsed who are proving that every day. And then one of them in desperation after 10 years is like, I have to have sex with somebody.
Yeah,
and they get on Ashley Madison, and then the whole world is like, you're a terrible person. Even, and you get no credit for the 10 years that you stuck by a bedridden, ill spouse.
Right.
Or you stayed with your partner because you had kids with special needs, and it was such a grinding, crushing load that it just sort of knocked, you know, you're caregivers, you're both nurses, and you're not really, you don't see each other as erotic objects anymore.
Right.
And nobody looks at that and says, you deserve some sex. People look at that and say, you're awful.
I don't
get that. Now, there's some people on Ashley Madison who are shitbags and serial adulterers and dads, but not everybody who's cheating, like Esther Perel says, not every victim of the affair is the victim of the marriage.
Right. That you bring up another point, and this was one of the three things as well. It was infidelity, loss of attraction, mismatched libidos. Can anything mm-hmm. be done about that, or is that just going to send somebody out the door? Because you've mentioned it, and that's what happened with the couple friend of mine, that one couple that I mentioned. And what do you do about that?
Well, there's a corrective for it, which is, you know what? You can sleep with other people.
Oof.
But there are people who, you know, have very low libidos who, and we live in such a sex-negative culture that the therapists and the advice columnists typically will say to the higher libido partner, well, you just have to have a whole lot less sex than you want to have. And you're the problem. If you can only solve this desire to have sex thing problem of yours, then everything will be wonderful in this relatively sexless marriage. And, you know, I think the fix for a mixed match libido is to not marry that person. But if you have married that person and you have kids and you're committed, is for there to be some kind of milking that happens, sort of joyful masturbation assists, I call them. You know, if you're with somebody who has a high libido and you have a low libido, you can lay in bed with that person for 15 minutes and say a few dirty things or sit on their face while they masturbate or whatever.
Right.
While they take care of themselves, and you're sort of like laying a chit down for contact later. Like, this is the best I can do right now. We'll have like full-blown sex when I'm horny. Or you say to that person, this is the amount of sex we have, and DADT, and if you get it elsewhere, but you're loyal and true and home and a good partner, parent, and lover to me, I don't need to know what else is happening.
There are so many nuances. There really are. And it seems
accommodations.
Like,
sometimes I think accommodation is the way to make a long-term relationship work. There are accommodations and compromises. And a lot of the, you know, people hold up monogamous, lifelong, perfectly executed monogamy as this ideal. And then if your relationship falls even, you know, 1 millimeter short of that ideal, it's tarnished and worthless and should be cast aside. And I just think that's unrealistic. And that's a standard we apply to nothing else in long-term or marital relationships. That if there's any imperfection, oh, just throw it away. It's worthless. We don't say that about, you know, housekeeping. We don't say that about child rearing. We don't say that about, you know, finances. We don't say that about all the other things that marriage can be about. But when it comes to sex, oh, gosh, somebody, you know, stepped out of line once, somebody shat the bed once, it's all over, throw it all away.
I have to say, you have, God willing, I don't have to go through this in my relationship, but should I? You've definitely shifted my perspective on how to see it and how to handle it, because I would have done the absolute worst thing, and I hope it doesn't happen. But
and
if it does, you know, you're right.
Think of your kids. This is what, when my husband and I adopted our son, we were monogamous at his insistence, and he was very hyper about it, and like calling me in the middle of the night in hotel rooms to make sure I was alone, and like crazy stuff. And now we're non-monogamous, and it's fine, and it's great, and at his instigation. But when we first were adopting, I told him, I'm not having a kid with you if cheating means our relationship is over. Because one of our other, gay men, one or the other or both of us are going to cheat at some point. And so what we're saying is we're adopting a child knowing we're going to break up.
Wow.
Probably soon. And so that's not fair to the kid. So the agreement we came to at that time wasn't, okay, we can do anything, we're an open relationship now. The agreement we came to, and I think all people making a commitment or having kids particularly should have this conversation and really do this. I'm going to be prescriptive. Do this. You say to each other, if there's an infidelity, we will work through it. Our default setting is going to be to work through it and stay together. Our default setting is not going to be divorce. And, you know, somebody sleeps with your sister on your wedding night, that's different.
Right, right.
There's some unforgivable sins, right? Like, it depends on the kind of infidelity, but our default setting is going to be, we're going to get through this for our kids. This is the kind of sacrifice we will make for our kids. It's not a license to cheat. It doesn't mean we don't have a monogamous commitment. But if this thing that is so common, that touches almost all long-term relationships over the decades, should touch our relationship, we're not going to break up over it. We're not going to look at our history together, the property we own together, the children we're raising together, the intermingling of both of our extended families, and say all of that should be given less weight than that blowjob you got on a business trip.
Dan, I cannot thank you enough. I know I've kept you for about a half an hour, and I'm so sorry. Autumn's like, chill the time. But I just, every time I talk to you, I really look at certain aspects of the world, and this is why I love your podcast so much and your column so much, and I want to reiterate where everybody can find you. So will you tell them, because I know you have the Savage Love Cast, but then there's an extended podcast. Will you tell everybody where they can get both?
You can find my column, Savage Love, at The Stranger, which is my home paper, thestranger.com. And I do every week the Savage Love Cast, which you can find on iTunes and Stitcher, but also at savagelovecast.com. And I do a free version of the show, which is 45, 50 minutes long with ads. And there's a 90-minute version of the show, which is subscription. I think it's $5 a month or something. And you have access to the entire library of 90-minute shows. And it's free, or it's 90 minutes in there and no ads. So when we started doing that because people said, we love the show, but we wish there were no ads. And we were like, okay, we want it to be longer. Well, here's a longer show, no ads, but you have to pay for it. So savagelovecast.com, you can find both versions.
We will try not to abuse our relationship, but we hope to have you back again.
We'll try.
I love doing it. Have me back anytime.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you so much, man. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
I love him.
Me too.
I just love him. Isn't it interesting the way he just tells it to you straight, man? He cuts the crap and he's like, listen, this is the reality of the situation. Like, I'm not going to be precious. I'm not going to say the politically correct thing. Like, this is what happens. And you kind of go, oh my God, of course.
Yeah. It makes so much sense hearing it come out of his mouth.
Yeah. And because trust me, Autumn, I'm telling you, like, if Heidi cheated on me, I would be like, that's it. It's over. Like, I would freak out, man. I would freak out instead of being like, okay, is it because I'm not home enough? Is it because she was feeling like I was neglecting her? Is it because she felt that, you know, I was belittling her by telling her how to do things? Like, that's the immediate place I would go.
Yeah.
Me, and I'm the victim. I'm humiliated. I'm disrespected, you know, and I, you know, I can't forgive you. Like, what the hell?
I really love that tip on making that agreement in advance.
Yeah, I agree.
Look, it's never my intention to cheat on my partner, and I hope that he never has an affair outside of our relationship, but I would hope that I will have to just come back to this if that happens, back to Dan's advice and really think about it, because I wouldn't want that to destroy a great relationship.
No, I know. Yeah, I love him. All right, well.
There you go.
Yeah.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.